The Senate takes a look at a controversial nominee to the Fed. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. The president has nominated two people to be on the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. This is the board that helps make monetary policy. It has significant influence on the operation of the U.S. economy. The Senate Banking Committee is holding a hearing this morning on these nominees, including one who is very controversial, conservative economist Judy Shelton. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Judy Shelton wants to go back to the gold standard, pegging the dollar to the price of gold and raising or lowering interest rates to keep gold at that price. The problem with that, says Carl Smith, the vice president at the Tax Foundation, is gold prices move around a lot.
Because the demand for gold fluctuates daily, the Federal Reserve would have to fluctuate its monetary policy, and so it makes monetary policy very unstable.
Another thing that can make monetary policy unstable? Politics. In an op-ed last fall, Shelton said there should be improved coordination between the Fed and the White House. Deutsche Bank chief U.S. economist Matthew Luzzetti says you don't want a Fed that raises or lowers interest rates based on political leanings.
You want a Fed that is independent of those leanings and is setting monetary policy appropriately to hit their goals of full employment and 2% inflation.
But Luzzetti says even if Shelton is confirmed and joins the Fed Board of Governors, she'll be one voice among many, and the other Fed governors don't share her opinions. Then there's the other Fed nominee at today's hearing, St. Louis Fed economist Christopher Waller. He's written extensively on the importance of Fed independence. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
More CEOs are heading for the exits. 219 U.S. CEOs stepped down in January, up 37% from the month before, up 40% from January of last year. This is according to outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas. Why so much executive turnover? Here's Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman.
When a CEO vacates the top slot, voluntarily or with a push, it's often an outsider who replaces them, says Andy Challenger at Challenger Gray and Christmas.
There's a lot of new technologies and new competitors, and companies are having to retrench, change strategies, and bring in outside talent to help them combat those technologies.
Turnover's highest in nonprofits and government, where leaders face a volatile election year that could impact their funding and programs. And in every industry, CEOs face unexpected threats like
coronavirus.
Joe Galvin at executive advisory firm Vistage says CEOs he works with spent the last 2 years navigating the U.S.-China trade war, and now this.
In one case, their factories will be closed until mid-March. That's an emerging flashpoint.
Galvin says CEOs face more mundane challenges, too. How to hire talent when unemployment's so low, and how to increase sales when economic growth is so slow. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 1.6%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 7-9% range, with the Dow future down 218 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 1.58%. The U.S. and China may have struck a truce in the Phase One trade deal, but major issues remain, and our next guest does not see that changing. Meredith Sumter is head of research strategy and operations at Eurasia Group, and she says the U.S. and China are, in a sense, going to go their own separate economic ways. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
If the U.S. and China are not going to resolve their differences, you have described the result as a decoupling of our two economies. Can you explain what you mean by that?
So essentially, with the Chinese concepts of guiding its own state economy and shoring up state support for industries and sectors, it distorts the market-based competition that is the foundation of how U.S. and other Western liberal economies work.
So what happens then if you have these two different systems? How does the rest of the world as a whole adapt?
This is not going to be black or white. You either work with China or you work with the United States. It's more so which economy will be more dominant in a region or in a third-party country. And that's going to be critical to watch. But essentially, when the two largest economies, when they politicize their trading relationships and force countries and companies to choose, inevitably, the innovation and supply chains are going to become more regional and less global. And this is going to cast something of a geopolitical chill over global business.
Does that mean less prosperity?
It does. It means slowing growth. It means more inefficiencies. It means an uptick of regulatory and compliance costs and other headaches for multinational companies who are trying to straddle these two different systems. You know, the question we have from a geotechnology perspective is, where will that new virtual Berlin Wall go up? And which side will countries, you know, fundamentally choose as being their dominant partner? And in that, we think that the shift toward China is going to be most palpable in areas where they already have very deep or more dominant investment ties. So that would be Southeast Asia, Africa, Eastern Europe, and Latin America. You know, the countries in all these regions are going to become battlegrounds where the U.S. and China will compete to decide who will supply those consumers with the tools and the products and the services necessary to navigate the 21st century economy.
Meredith Sumter, Head of Research Strategy and Operations at Eurasia Group, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM American Public Media.